Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball
with Air Sport. Every Champions Cup and now every Pro 14 game only on the Air Sport pack.
So we're all kicking off. Heineken Champions Cup is on the way. We're here with Air Sport, the home of rugby in Ireland. Get your comments in. Heineken Star Comment every week wins prizes. This week we'll be giving away tickets for Munster Gloucester on October 20th, round two of the Champions Cup. So get your points or questions in for Matt Williams is on the line and Rory O'Connor of the Irish Independent here in studio. You're very welcome, lads. Thanks for joining us.
Sure.
And I should mention as well, lots of commentary of the games coming up this weekend. So Champions Cup kicks off on Friday night. It's Leinster against Wasps. We'll have Dave McIntyre, Liam Toland and Kevin McLaughlin at the RDS. And then on Saturday, we're on from 1pm to 10pm, no less. So Connacht against Bordeaux at 3 o'clock with Oisin and Michael Swift at the Sports Ground. To be followed, 5:30 by Ulster against Leicester in the Heineken Champions Cup. Conor Morris and Paddy Wallace there. So, action-packed weekend coming up. Champions Cup is here, Rory. Good times.
That's great. It's the,
exciting.
Lastly, we kind of kicked the season off and now we kick on a little bit more.
Yeah. To kick things off in broad terms, Matt, everybody's looking at Leinster again. Is it Leinster again?
You've got to say all the evidence points that way, Joe. It's early days and the beauty of the Heineken Cup, and isn't it lovely we can call it the Heineken Cup again? I had to always, whenever I was doing interviews, I had to have a little note saying Champions Cup because I just said Heineken Cup. It's great to call it.
We were all just getting the hang of it and now they've pulled the rug out again.
Yeah. Well, so old blokes like me, I just go back to what I've always said. It's good, you know, I don't have to make a mistake. Yeah. More mistakes than I usually do. But the beauty of the Heineken Cup is it always throws up a team that mightn't be performing so well in its own league and they perform extraordinarily well in the Champions Cup. But all the evidence right now is saying, well, Leinster and Saracens and Exeter will be there when the whips are cracking. The really interesting scenario this year is the French, because the way we all know the way the cup is done, you have to. It's where you finish the previous year depends on where you are in the Champions Cup. And the two leading clubs in the top 14 are Clermont and Stade Français, and they're not in the cup.
Yeah, it's amazing. They
both had poor years. And last year's, you know, probably annual high performers, Toulon, are in relegation trouble. And Montpellier have had a very poor start in the season. They've come good recently, and Racing are right in the middle, Racing 92. So the French become the unknown. There's a few other reasons on that I'll get into later on. But yeah, Leinster are the trendsetters and the front runners.
Mm.
I think if you'd asked us this time last year, we'd have both said Saracens. And I think everyone was saying Saracens last year. And I think there's so much can happen between now and April when the quarterfinals roll around, especially for a team like Leinster who are bulk suppliers to a national team. There's danger there for them. But at this stage, Matt's right, they look in such rude health. I think they've all 27 internationals available for selection this week when he names his team at 12 o'clock tomorrow. Plus Jameson Gibson-Park, who's a 50-50, I think, this week, okay. But is, you know, long-term going to be okay, and James Lowe. So that's not a bad place to be,
no.
Kicking off. But whether they'll have them all, you know, I think Joey Carby leaving has left a bit of a risk over Johnny Sexton. Their depth, Easton Assi was gone. That's obviously stripped a bit of leadership away. And Jordy Murphy, you know, they relied on him quite heavily last year. But at the outset, with everything, you know, that we know right now, it's very hard to look past them. All four semi-finalists look in decent health for this season. Scarlets maybe have gone back a little bit. Munster have obviously lost Ebo, but gained Carberry and Byrne. Racing have, you know, had their own changes, but they're still a very strong team. I think Exeter are the team that will come from the pack, had the misfortune of coming across Leinster in the pool stages last year.
Yeah, okay, well then, in that case, let's talk Munster away to Exeter at Sandy Park. 3:15 on Saturday. Could be the game of the weekend, actually, in many ways. Good early news for Munster this week in that Conor Murray has signed a contract extension until 2022. He's 29 years old now. I'm delighted to have signed and staying with the RFU until at least 2022. David Nusifora, Conor, genuinely world-class player. 67 caps for Ireland at this stage, 2 World Cups under his belt, twice British and Irish Lions tourist. He's, 140-odd Munster appearances. This seemed like a fairly straightforward deal, Rory. There were no visits to France or musings publicly or leaks. It was very quiet, it seemed.
There were visits to France. He's been in Racing twice, or he's been over to visit Simon Zeba twice in the last couple of weeks. But according to the RFU today, this was done in September.
Yeah.
And it does seem quite clear that, that Conor Murray, once the RFU were able to match what he felt he deserved, which they did quite willingly because he is the best in this position. Certainly, Aaron Smith might have a say in that, but he's certainly the best in Europe and he's one of the best, one of the two best in the world, and they're quite far ahead of the pack.
Yeah.
That he was happy to come in. And you've got to think it's a massive vote of confidence for both Munster and Ireland and what's been done here.
I presume he's gone in fairly close to highest paid Irish player, has he?
If he's not the highest, he's the second highest. And that's what he, that's where he stands. You know, he's certainly, you know, Johnny Sexton's been leading the way, especially since Jamie Heaslip retired. He's certainly up there, you know, and that's what he deserves. He is such an important player, and you've got to think now they've signed him to 2022.
Yeah.
They see him as being probably the starting scrum half in 2023 at that World Cup as well. That's four World Cups. And his best chance of getting there is probably by staying, because if he did go to a... Now, Racing was never a realistic one. They've got one of the best scrum halves in Europe in Machinot. It always seemed a bit weird, but there is a lot of French clubs and a lot of English clubs who'd love to have a player of his calibre on their books. So you've got to think that the player welfare system, all the things that the Irish players take into account, he probably could have earned a little bit more by going away, but the long-term benefit of staying here, of staying with his home province, the fact that he's only won one Celtic League in his career, probably burning at him inside. And you know, he could have gone away and had a better chance of winning silverware, because Munster are in the field rather than at the head of it. But it's a huge piece of news, for a huge piece of business for the RFU. Great to get it done so early.
Yeah.
Stops the annual speculation fest that I get involved in and everyone does. Much rather get it done, that it's done and we can focus on the rugby. And great bit of business for Munster, great vote of confidence there as well.
And forgive me for being grubby, what is the highest paid player earning now, give or take? And I presume at this stage, is that very much privately funded as well as IRFU funded deal at this stage?
Yeah, I think all the big deals have an element of that, and they tie in sponsorships. There's obviously bonuses, there's appearance fees and all that sort of stuff, which muddy the water. You're talking, I think, upwards of 700 in and around that range.
Okay.
You know, the IRFU would probably say it was lower, but they would, you know, the players' agents would probably say it was higher, they would as well. The highest paid player in the world at the moment is Piatow, he's on £1 million a year at Bristol, and he's not even an out half, which is where the money usually goes. I think Cruden's on 800 or so at Montpellier. So if you think the RFU are probably paying a little bit less than a little bit less than the big French clubs and the big English spenders where they're bankrolled by private, fully by private money, you know, there's a sweet spot there around between 6 and 8, I think, that the biggest players are coming in at. It's hard to be specific because, you know, there's all sorts of information flying around, but that's a fair enough estimate, I think.
Okay, well, here until 2022 is the key news anyway. So Munster away to Exeter, Matt, Sandy Park. Van Graan talked about the defeat to Leinster as a really big performance, said he was very proud of the team, came back against a team that has not lost here at the Aviva since 2015, and he thought they were right in it with those 3-4 scrums in the goal line, getting penalty after penalty. So he came away feeling pretty good about Saturday. Eddie O'Sullivan was on the show on Monday, kind of felt at times their attack looked a bit disorganised, was the word he used. He wasn't so sure it was that great a performance in some respects. Where are they? How are they shaping up going into Exeter?
I'd probably be edging towards Eddie's comments. I thought that they certainly dominated position and possession against Leinster, and they got a shocking call when Cuthell's made that break. That happens in a game, but it went against them. There was nothing wrong with that, and Cuthell should have scored under the sticks. But having said that, that's not the top line Leinster side by a considerable margin. They were playing some guys there who might have been the third choices, and Leinster's defence was simply sensational. Look, Munster are where they are. They're at home, they're a beast, and that's going to be their strength. But away from home, they've been exceptionally poor, and I have to use that term, exceptionally. So I think this week is a really, really big week for Munster rugby. If they don't come out of Sandy Park with at least a losing bonus point, that could be all over for them, because I don't think they're going to get enough points to be second in that pool to get out. I think the pool further down, where you've got the two French teams, both Montpellier and Toulon together, they're going to be... I think both of them will get out of that pool.
Mm.
So Munster will be fighting, if they don't come away with some points at Sandy Park, to be a second best to get out of a pool. And I just don't think they've got it in them at the moment, away from home. Back in Limerick, for sure. They're a powerful organisation. But Exeter have been playing some really tough, disciplined, well-organised rugby. There's a cigarette paper between themselves and Saracens, in my opinion, in the games I've seen. And down there in Exeter, it's a tough place to go. We saw that game last year where they played Leinster, and it was hand-to-hand combat. And Leinster had to do some things that perhaps people didn't think they could do to win. They were so physical and so brutal in defence that day.
Yeah.
It's a real handful for them. So a big, big day at the office for Munster. Look, I think they're capable. They're a capable team. Their bench is not as strong as other teams. And I think there's way too much talk about Joey. Look, I disagree with most people. I thought Ross Byrne was a better 10 on Saturday than Joey. And I thought Byrne had a lot to say. I thought his performance was really good. I thought his control of the game was great. They had so much ball, but that is, Munster had so much ball, but they were not organised. Now, I've said to you before, Joe, I don't think we're going to see the best of Munster's attack until after Christmas, because they're still learning a system where Joey's in place. He hasn't got top line nines giving him the ball like Connor Murray, who I agree is, with Aaron Smith, is the best nine in the world. And the difference that makes to an attack, that second to a second and a half, is massive. It's 5-6 metres when the ball comes into a 10's hands. So a lot more time to make decisions and to get your play accurate. And Munster just weren't accurate enough. They were still good, though, and I would agree with Coach Van Graan, but there was a lot to take out of that away performance.
Okay. I'm curious, Rory, for your thoughts on Exeter and Exeter in Europe. You know, so they're going very well in the Premiership again and have been for some time. I saw Gerry Thornley making the point that the European form is a bit more questionable. Like, for all the good rugby and talk of them being a coming force, the five previous campaigns, all they've had to show was one quarter final 3 seasons ago where they lost to Wasps. And then last year, okay, they beat Montpellier, but then Leinster did the double over them, and then Glasgow beat them in round six. So 31 European matches, they've won 12, lost 19. Are they going to make more of a mark on Europe this year, do you feel?
I think so. I think it's one of those things that, you know, it does take time. And they're a club that is really, really stable. They've had the same director of rugby, a lot of the same personnel over that period of time. They've brought through some young players. They've signed well. Their depth in certain positions is very, very strong. And they are learning how to win at this level. Like, you know, Leinster have so much IP in terms of Europe and we saw when it all left around 2014 or 2015, when Sexton went and they all retired, how much they lost, and when it took bringing the Siwa back, getting Cullen to the top of the tree to help get them back to there. So I think they would have made a mark on the competition last season, but Leinster basically sucked the life out of them in those two games. I mean, they probably gave Leinster the toughest game on their apart from Racing in the final. The game in Aviva, they had them in massive trouble and left their foot off the Leinster throats, and they threw everything at them in Sandy Park that night, and Leinster just withstood it. It just showed how good that Leinster team is. So I think they have the players, they have the coach, they have the experience now to make a really good, strong bid. I disagree with Matt. I think Munster can get out of this pool, but I think they will do it as a second place team.
Okay.
I think Exeter will win this pool, particularly because I think Munster, above all the teams that, you know, above all the teams in contention, need their big men on deck. And missing Murray and Albie Mathewson going over there this weekend is a major issue, because Duncan Williams started the season as fourth or fifth choice, and now he's suddenly back. They turn their lonely eyes to him again, because it just seems to happen nearly every year now that he's thrown in one of these big games, and he's very resilient. He does tend to give them, you know, a 6 or 7 out of 10 performance, but there is a massive drop off between him and Conor Murray and the ability to control the game, and then it all falls on your very inexperienced number 10 away from home against a team that just thrives on mistakes.
And is there talk Neil Cronin might be back, or is?
I think if he's back, it'll be probably on the bench. You know, so he, you know, otherwise it would have been Jack Stafford, who's never played in Europe before. You know, very a young talented player, but again, it's not the place you want to be going without the two international scrum halves that you got, and your top call, your world class one, and the guy you brought in to replace him. It is an issue. They do have their first choice pack pretty much on deck, which is going to be a good thing. And
who'll start centre, Rory, or what's the word on
them? I think it'll be Scannell and Arnold. Even though Goggin was very, very good at the weekend, and Van Graan gave him a rave review. I just think that there's an established partnership there, and I think this is a game where they're going to have to make an awful lot of tackles, and there's a relationship there that pre-exists, especially if the 9-10 is relatively untested. I think your 12-13, the fact that Scannell can, you know, his left-footed boot is very good. Mm. He could take a bit of the pressure off Carberry. He's probably more of a ball player a little bit than Goggin, who's very direct. I think that's probably the balance they'll go for.
Mm. So we're talking losing bonus point here. That's the
good end. Result. Good result. Yeah.
You give them a decent chance of getting that.
8-point spread, so they're kind of on the margin of it. Yeah, I give them a chance, but I think without Murray, it's going to be very, very difficult.
Yeah, I mean, you keep forgetting that, Matt, I suppose, when we're trying to judge them on the big games. You have to kind of, how many points is Murray worth in a given game away from home, I wonder?
Well, there's an old saying, in your big games, you need your great players to play great, and he's a great player. He's going to go into the pantheon of Irish greats. When he retires, he's already there, and you can't measure what someone like Murray's absence will mean to a team like Munster that are just fighting to find that way to win away from home. And look, it's so hard, it's so difficult. They're 3-3. You know, they've won at home, and they've lost all three on the road. You go back to their last away game in Europe against Racing, which was a nightmare, absolute nightmare. So this is a psychological battle for them as well. But you know, you lose Conor Murray. It's like what would we say if we lost Paul O'Connell or Ronan O'Gara, you know, Keith Wood. They're world-class players over the years, have been the absolute talisman to them, and you need them. It doesn't mean that the young men going out there are not going to try their heart out and give everything they've got. And it's not what I'm suggesting. But, you know, a great player does do things that change games. And he's a massive loss. There's no two ways about that.
We have Leinster Wasps to kick the whole thing off on Friday Night Lights. You know, it's going to be a great occasion at the RDS. And it was funny, at the European Champions Cup launch, Johnny Sexton was there and he was asked about generally how he sees the competition shaping up. And the first thing he jumped for was, well, 3 years ago, Wasps came and you know, won 33 points to 6 and we bowed out of the competition. Ignores completely what's happened in the interim. So, you know, that's how they're pitching this game. We've got to see where we are, is how Johnny Sexton put it. I mean, it has been the most extraordinary 3 years when you do hark back to that November. Matt O'Connor got the bullet and Leo Cullen's thrust into this job, and I think it's Wade and Piatow and Simpson, 33-6. It was a shocking day, remember. And Leo Cullen was shell-shocked, thinking, this can't be what management is about. I'm like, this is really, really awful. And they bowed out that year. And yeah, I mean, to if you'd said to them that day, this is where you're going to be in 3 years, they'd have grabbed your hand off.
There's no place to hide in the RDS. You know, Leo Cullen, after he'd done his press, had gone back to the dressing rooms, and we just watched them. Like, he just walked by the press room on his way to his car, and it just looked like the loneliest place in the world. He looked like, you know, it was his first season, his first European game. Yeah. He lifted the trophies 3 times. So it was a really, really grim day. And then they went over and got a record, an even worse record defeat over in Coventry in round 6. They bathed in that pool as well. That was just a really grim year. And it seemed to show at the time that how far off they were, but they got it together, bringing Lancaster in and all that sort of thing.
And the other amazing, I mean, a lot of them have mentioned that Bath game, I think it was in round 6 that year, and Ringrose, Luke McGrath, James Tracy, Tyke Furlong and Ross Maloney all made their European debuts that day.
Round 4, I think.
They
went
over there. And they won.
Yeah.
And so they've all kind of talked about that as being a moment where they thought, well, maybe we're not doomed here.
I think that was the day they learned that, and the final defeat to Connacht was the time they learned to trust the young guys. And if they're in form and they're playing well, back them.
Yeah.
Like, I think maybe there was players who got the start in 2016 Pro 14 final who probably didn't deserve to get the start based on form, but got it on reputation. Mm. And that gave the players who were probably surviving on reputation a bit of a kick up behind, and they started performing as well. And then you see that mix of youth and experience last season marched away from, you know, unbeaten through Europe and looked so impressive the whole way through.
Yeah.
A different outfit, a different organisation. And then Asiwa leaves and you have leaders like James Ryan and Dan Levy emerging. Their stats are off the charts and they just look so formidable. And Wasps come over, you know, spent big over the years, made that big move, but now there's kind of mumblings of financial issues behind the scenes. They've got, you know, a big suspension coming tonight, I think, and Nathan Hughes hasn't been announced yet, but he's probably going to be suspended. They've injuries. Jimmy Goppert's gone for the season. They're not in a great place. They have a bit of a scrum half crisis of their own. So, you know, whereas they were imperious that day, they don't look as strong now. Bath are not as strong. Leinster's pool looks very, very winnable.
Yeah, so Wasps as well. The other story with Wasps is they're still fairly free scoring in the Premiership thus far. this year, Matt, but they've also conceded 153 points in six games. So I dare say they'll find the Leinster defence a bit trickier than others. And if they're conceding 153 points in six Premiership games, then the RDS this Friday will be no fun for them.
Well, they're coming up against the probably the best attack I've seen in Europe. If I've looked across the French, the English, and the Pro 14, Leinster's organisation in attack is superior to everyone. Their attitude, their mindset on how they can attack and how they want to attack you is superior. And I love what Felipe Contepomi is brought to the table there. I love their attack off scrums, which is something I adore. And I felt so many coaches are just off the pace here. And Felipe has gone back 20 years and changed their alignment, changed their starting positions. And it's wonderful because there's an old saying, in attack and defence, start where you're not going to be. You've got to think about it a bit. You start out of position, and just before the ball comes into play, you move into position. And Felipe's got some of that backline play just impossible for the defence to choose or decide before they're in motion who's getting the ball.
Okay.
It's wonderful. It's like a basketball play. It's like you're standing, you've got a point guard around the ring, and all of a sudden everyone's moving. And the only guy who knows, the people who know getting the ball is the offense. And the point guard gives it to one guy in that play. And I just am very critical of a lot of coaching at the moment. It seems to be like YouTube coaching. They just copy and paste instead of really thinking out. And Felipe and Leinster have got some deep thinking going on. But they've got players who are capable of implementing that thinking on the field. And that's Johnny Sexton, of course, has a lot to do with that. But you can see Ross Byrne, even though they didn't have much possession last week, the organisation has it. Ross Byrne has it. Doesn't matter, you know, if it's Gibson Park at nine. Doesn't matter who's at nine. They've got the ability through that whole pack to or that whole group to work together.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
I think one other point too, mate. I think a very big point in Leo's life as a player, as a very young player, was that Leo and I have often spoken about. Not that we talk every day or anything, but over the years. Northampton were European champions. They beat Munster in the final, and the next year Leinster drew them, and everyone went, "Wow, Leinster's going to get a pounding." And Leinster beat them home and away. So they beat the European champions home and away. Leinster played very well at that time, but there is no doubt Northampton turned up, cocky, thinking all they got to do is turn up. They're champions, and they'll bumped out. I can guarantee you that Leo will be smacking that into that Leinster side. Teams don't go back-to-back in championships for a reason. It's not physical. It's not skill. 90% of the reason teams don't go back-to-back is mental. If Leo gets the mentality of that team right, and John, you don't have to worry about Johnny Sexton. His mentality's right the whole time. If he gets the majority of that squad's mentality right, they can go back-to-back. Any failure will be their mentality, but I don't see it right now. So it's a fascinating couple of months to watch, because back to back, hey, it's hard. That's why no one does it. It's so difficult.
Have you noticed the Contepomi?
You're seeing bits, yeah, the starter plays. I think what I've noticed the most this year with Leinster is their how clinical they are, and I think that was the most thing that was in evidence last Saturday. Was, you know, Munster had six trips to the 22, only scored three times. Leinster left with 7 points each time. Even, you know, Byrne standing in for Johnny off the tee was perfect. They took every chance, and I think in games in Europe, when you're away from home, when you're playing against a Wasps away or Toulouse away, you know, to have the starter plays that Matt's talked about from Felipe, the invention, the fact that you've got a James Lowe out ball, so if things aren't going your way, give it to him, he'll make something happen. You know, there's not everyone has that. Like, a lot of teams don't have just a player who can just make things happen from nowhere, and then you have the control and decision making of a Johnny Sexton. And the relentless ability to keep the ball in the way that they do and win collisions with their latch plays with, you know, two players, you know, a guy supporting the ball carrier, which wins the collision. So even though they're not the biggest team in the world, they still get over the gain line all the time. It's just they have the full package. And even if, you know, when they don't have the ball, their pressure game is sufficient, a bit like Exeter, to cause so many problems that they can get points off the opposition's play as well. So I don't think we've seen them anywhere near their best this season, and yet they're 5 from 6. They've beaten Munster while resting a load of players, and we're starting to see a bit of Felipe stuff. But if he's like any other coach in the world, he's been keeping the good stuff for now. And I think on Friday we'll see it. You know, if they get scrums in good positions, we'll see a bit of what he's brought to the table.
And the question I asked Keith and Eddie on Monday: so are we both in agreement, you two being we, that of the Scott Fardy, Jameson Gibson-Park, if he's fit and when he's fit in the future, and James Lowe triangle, that it's going to be Fardy and James Lowe who get the nod?
I would think so, yes.
Yeah. Lowe's just played himself into that now, Matt.
Yeah, I thought it... I think that's the case. It's a different setup this year with the foreigners, but I think Fardy comes in, gives a lot of experience and support to that forward pack, and I don't think there's anyone else. Like, as much as I love McFadden and am a great admirer of his longevity and service, I think James Lowe is just explosive and powerful. Some of his offloading is pretty extraordinary. The only thing with James, he can make a lot of mistakes, but I love watching him play because he's just unpredictable. I think that's the way I go.
Cantabomi was saying he's still, it's not a big issue, but getting to grasp with some of the defensive systems. And we saw a little bit of that when he first arrived last year. We're kind of running out of time, so we won't really be able to get into Ulster against Leicester in too much depth, but we do have that game live at the weekend. Jordan Murphy coming over, obviously, it'll be interesting. There's a text in, somebody wondering, lads, pick your Leinster back row for me if everybody's fit.
Who's first?
Who's nailed on if everybody's fit?
Reece Ruddock's return, making him captain last week, that's thrown. Where do you put Fardy? So Fardy's got to play six.
Interestingly, Fardy, as I understand it, is only sanctioned as a lock. And I know he played back row last year, but there were injuries. But I actually think, as an IRFU sanction, the agreement was he was coming over to play second row. Now, I don't know, will they ever enforce it? It seems like it's a fairly malleable thing.
I think they'll be encouraged to use him in the second row strongly, if everyone's fit. But then you've got two Irish qualified second, sorry, you've got two Ireland starting second rows potentially as well. So you're Fardy in the mix. But I think once he's signed, I think they have a little bit of free reign.
Okay, so we've Fardy, we've O'Brien, we've Van der Flyer, we've Dan Levy, we've Jack Conan, we've Reece Ruddock.
Ruddock, Levy, O'Brien.
Ruddock, Levy, O'Brien.
Van der Flyer off the bench.
Can you live with that, Matt?
You could, and you'd have Fardy off the bench as well as a second rower, which gives you a fair bit of work there. Sure, I would not disagree with anything that's been said. The thing we don't know is where Shaunie O'Brien with his match fitness for the big game. Leo will know that. Mm. He might be another week away from starting in Europe. They might bench him this week, but Leo will be the one that knows best on that one.
Yeah, either way, it's not a bad problem to have, I would think.
Mate, what a beautiful, beautiful problem for a coach.
If I keep them all happy.
Yeah. So,
compare that to Ulster.
Yeah, well, exactly. Well, Ulster are getting a few back. I think Geordie Murphy is back.
Yeah, Marty Moore as well.
Yeah, so Leicester are fifth in the Premiership. I mean, very quickly, because we've got that game live anyway, so we will talk about it in more depth. We're saying, I presume, what you're saying, Leinster win, Munster losing bonus point, and Ulster at home?
It's going to be difficult.
Ambush, if that's their only hope. I mean, that's a really tough pool for Ulster. They're on the ropes.
Yeah, they've Racing and Scarlets with Leicester, so I mean...
Really tough pool. Yeah. And they could have lost all their games this year. The last second of every game they've won was a kick. They could have lost them all. They didn't, and that's full credit to them. Full credit they did. But it's a tough, tough day at the office, because Leicester have turned a little bit of a corner with Geordie taking over, and it'll be an interesting one. They can ambush them, but it'll have to be an ambush.
Okay, lads, we'll have to leave it there. We're out of time. Matt Williams, thanks a million. Rory O'Connor from the Irish Independent, cheers for coming in.
Cheers.
Wednesday night rugby on Off the Ball
with Air Sport. Both Munster v Leinster derbies exclusively live on Air Sport.
Now you're welcome back. A good news story for Irish rugby. We have Willie Ruane, Connacht CEO, on the line. Afternoon, Willie.
Hey, Joe. How you doing?
Great. So, €30 million development at the sports ground. Great news announced on Monday. Tell us all.
Yeah, look, we were delighted to be able to announce the plans for the redevelopment of the sports ground into a proper fit-for-purpose modern sports stadium, along with a new high-performance centre. And, the stadium will have a capacity of 12,000. and the High Performance Centre will obviously cater for our professional players that we currently have and those in the future, but not just that, the emerging talent that's coming through Connacht in the years ahead. So, yeah, great news for us. Exciting times, obviously, and a pretty significant project.
Yeah, it's been done in conjunction, I see, with the Irish Greyhound Board, the owners of the land as well, the Galway Agricultural and Sports Society. It's been 3 years in the making. You explored all options here, including even the possibility of leaving the sports ground. I don't know how seriously that was done.
Yeah, we did, actually. We looked at everything, and I think we owed it to ourselves, but we owed it to anyone who would be really interested in this project. We wanted to take a very cold, hard look at what the best location would be. And, you know, there are different views out there and different people will have different opinions on it, whether that's from out of town to inside in Galway City and different locations within Galway City. And a lot of those would have been speculated on and, as I say, different people would have had opinions. But we tried to do it in a very objective way. We literally started with an aerial view of Galway City and the environs, looking at every green patch there was. And we started to whittle that down and we arrived at a long list. We did a SWOT analysis of the long list and then we came down to a short list. And on the short list, we did a proper feasibility on each one of those options. Mm. And look, the sports ground has an awful lot going for it, that's for sure. But it was really important that we went through that process rather than just making broad assumptions from the outset.
And as a matter of interest, what were the best arguments for other locations or for moving away?
Well, look, I mean, different people would have had a view that, you know, you could move outside the town and go to a brownfield site and start all over again. They would have had different strategic locations across the city that for one reason they might have felt, you know, represented some sort of options. And then obviously whether we would be able to reach an agreement and share a vision with the IGB and indeed the Galway Agriculture and Sports Society for the ground. Mm. You know, on top of that, even in terms of a development of this scale, how do you manage to retain your base as well? And by our base, I mean our training base, our administrative base, so that you're not displaced as part of that process. So all of those things came into the consideration and we ultimately arrived at the sports ground.
Okay, so and look, Connacht have been there since 1926, so you don't want to sacrifice that historical link easily. And there's just the walk-up contingent factor, you know? I mean, one of the great things is you can stroll up from the city centre and I guess even you might get a spur-of-the-moment crowd coming up to the sports ground and you don't want to sacrifice that too easily. That must be certainly one of the arguments for staying where you were. What were the other ones? How did the sports ground redevelopment win out ultimately, Willie?
Well, even if you just take it from an infrastructure perspective, we're very close to the city centre. That's one thing and that helps in creating the atmosphere and that a match or a night at the sports ground is in a Connacht rugby sense. So that was really important. But outside of that, we're very close to the main bus station. We're very close to the main train station. We're on the side of the city that is more easily accessible if you want to come from Mayo or Sligo or Leitrim or the rest of the province. Mm. Indeed, if you want to come from outside of the province. And that accessibility was obviously very important to us as well. So, you know, there was a number of factors just the likes of those that all fed into the equation. Mm.
And you're looking at some kind of 4G pitch or a hybrid anyway?
Yeah, we look at synthetic surface. And, you know, obviously one aspect of it is the performance and allowing the players to express themselves in a way in which they believe they can and are certainly well capable of. And the better the surface, obviously, the better the opportunities you have to do that. But outside of that, it's usability as well. I mean, we host every cup final in Connacht from under-13s all the way through to grassroots senior rugby. And whether that's boys or girls, all the way through and on certain weekends, that puts very significant pressure on the pitch, particularly at the back end of the season. If that coincides with a dodgy spell of weather, we really are under the pump. So a better surface in, you know, as I said, the technology in pitch surfaces has come on leaps and bounds. And as I say, whether it's actual 4G or whether it's hybrid, we'll be exploring all of those. We've seen a lot of those surfaces over the last while. We went and visited a number of them, and they're all very impressive.
I don't know what you're talking about. The weather's always glorious down there, no?
It is if you're from the west, obviously. So, yeah. You know, I think look, it's funny, we've had people come to the sports ground, and even people from Glasgow come to us and they complain about the rain as if it doesn't rain in Glasgow. So there's rain in every part of the country. But maybe there's a special version of rain in the West that we're all as proud of as anything else. But
yeah,
I think in fairness, the quality of the rugby that's been put on over the last number of years, notwithstanding the conditions, has been something that has been a credit to everyone, because they still play with the ambition to try and throw the ball around, which is very commendable.
No, it's true. So I see this is a combination of public money and private funding as well. What's the breakdown there, Willie? What are the challenges in raising that private money? What's the split there of the 30 million?
Yeah, well, obviously we're awaiting the launch of the new large-scale sports infrastructure fund that the government will soon be announcing. And obviously the parameters of that, the criteria for that, that will all come with that announcement. And that from there will inform our own application. So I'm not in a position to speculate as to exactly what the mix would be or the split would be. But look, in terms of raising our own funding, obviously you'll have a combination of sources, whether that's naming rights, whether that's debt, whether that's philanthropic support. All of those come into the mix, and we're in a pretty strong position on all of those. So the ultimate and final mix is something that we'll hold our position on such time as we get the clarity from the government as to what the parameters are.
In an ideal world, would you prefer to avoid selling naming rights, or are you very much a pragmatist in this department?
Look, I think first and foremost, we want to realise the ambition to have the facilities that we all want. And, as much and all as... there's a sentimental attachment to a name. What we all want is we want our own talented players being able to run out in a facility that everyone will be proud of, and not just proud of in Connacht Rugby, but proud of across the whole region. So I think that's more important than the sentimentality of any name. Mm. And that's no disrespect to it either.
Yeah, I think it's becoming a commercial reality that we're all getting used to, yeah. So the plan, as I understand it, is to start next year pending government funding and planning permission, and you hope to continue playing at the sports ground. So it'll be one stand constructed, then the other, and there'll be a reduced capacity for the guts of a year. But the plan is certainly not to move away from the sports ground while the redevelopment happens.
Yeah, that's it, indeed, Joe. Yeah, I mean, first of all, we'll kick off at the Performance Centre because we'd need to relocate our own changing facilities and medical facilities and all that. So we'll get that developed. We'll move into that, and then we'll be able to knock some of the facilities that we have, the clan stand, and commence the construction then of the main stand, which would be on the clan side. Where it currently sits. So that would be the phase, and then move across into the other side of the pitch and do the work on that after that.
Okay.
So they're the main phases of it, and obviously the pitch being at the forefront of that as well.
Yeah. Well, listen, it's great news ultimately, and a development like this is only good for the sports ground. On the pitch, things are going pretty well as well. The win up in Belfast was a long time coming. Andy Friend certainly seems to be settling in. I presume, I mean, it's no fun when you hire a coach initially like Kieran Keane, and you don't anticipate having to deliver bad news to somebody like Kieran Keane so quickly. But you had to do that. That must have been a tricky period.
Hey, look, it was a tricky period for everyone. Last year was a difficult year for everyone involved, including Kieran, in fairness to him as well. So no one sets out for something not to work out. But we had to make that decision, and when we've moved on from it, and Andy is in situ now, and things are going very well. He's a super guy, and the players are performing on the pitch. I'm delighted for them as well. They're a very talented bunch. They're a really good group of guys, and it's important that they get their opportunity to show what they're able to do as well. And I say I'm delighted for them. I'm delighted for the fans as well, and to go up to Ulster last week and get the win. And while the performance wasn't polished, they dug in and they showed character as well. And obviously that's a huge part of the mix as well that you need if you're going to go on and achieve anything.
Okay. Willie, listen, thanks so much for joining us, and congrats again. Best of luck with the redevelopment. Cheers.
Thanks very much, Joe. Cheers.
Wednesday night rugby on Off the Ball
with Air Sport. Both Munster v Leinster derbies exclusively live on Air Sport.